Welcome to You Said This Would Be Fun, a call-in show where you air your game design grievances and we perform feats of design strength to help you resolve them. I'm your host, Jeff Warnder, joined today by game designer and podcaster Mike Bonet, host of the Who What Why cast. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on the show.
We appreciate your being here to help our callers out. So now, Mike, you've been podcasting for quite a few years now. I think you have 8 or 9 seasons in the books, if I'm not mistaken.
Or more, maybe. 25
seasons. I was way off. Okay.
The number of episodes in each season was very different in seasons 2 to 7 versus versus 8 through 25. But yeah, I've been doing this for a while.
So did you get into your podcast as a, you know, as a designer who wanted to explore podcasting to talk about design? Or did you get interested in design after podcasting and interviewing designers? Which was the chicken and which was the egg, I guess?
I think the former. I think specifically the reason that my original co-host and I got into it was there was a website. I want to say it was called Fear the Boot, but I don't remember anymore. And they had ideas about it was like a message board, and they had ideas about D&D 3rd edition that my friend really highly disagreed with. And they had a podcast, and so my friend was like, let's make a podcast of our own, and we're going to counter their ideas because I don't like it. Nice. So I was like, okay, sounds good. Let's do it. And then we started off like presenting our own ideas. Funny being somebody who never really played much D&D, but I had played like Baldur's Gate. So I was like, I guess I know enough, whatever. And then we did like 20 something episodes where we would talk about our ideas. We started kind of designing a game on the show. We decided we were breaking down. We were using the MDA framework to break down games, like all sorts of games. And this was like 2008, maybe 2007. And then in about 2009, my friend was like, why don't we just, what if we interviewed designers? And I was like, what does that mean? Okay. But we were kind of like him, my friend and I were, we were kind of interested in designing. A lot of it was reactionary. We built a Mordheim army and then played Mordheim and were super bored. So we were like, let's make a game that's more fun. And so it was like a weird, like it was kind of the former, but it was,
yeah,
I think it was kind of the former.
So you've interviewed then a lot of people, a lot of great game designers. Has there been any guests that you've had that have really stuck out, or any design wisdom that really surprised you or has really stuck with you in any of the interviews you've done?
I have a really terrible memory, so I can mostly remember my more recent episodes than I can my previous episodes. I was always impressed with how easily it was to get designers to come on the show. Even people like Bruno Fiduti. Like, I just sent him a Twitter message and was like, hey, Bruno, do you want to come on this podcast and talk to me about this idea? And he was like, sure. And like, my friend Ben Beagle was like, how you just tweeted at Fiduti and asked him to be, he's like, what the heck? I was like, that's how I do it. I just ask people. I think there's a couple of ideas that stuck out to me more recently. Colavini was on, and he said he called the designer a conductor, like an orchestral conductor.
Yep.
So the players are the orchestra, and the designer is just leading them, but they're still controlling all the play. And so I like that imagery. I thought that was kind of a neat piece of symbolism. And then Daryl Chow was on. Daryl Chow's out of Singapore. Yeah, he's out of Singapore. He was on, and he was telling, we were talking, and this is not even aired yet. So whenever this airs, this may not air yet. But we were talking about one of his philosophies that he used was he said he likes to make light games heavy and heavy games light. And I thought that's a really great way to think about how, because if I was like, that's really great to like flip them. So those are like the two biggest pieces of symbol of design knowledge.
Yeah, that's great. And there's a lot to contemplate there. Mm-hmm. So, well, I know then that you will be very helpful. It looks like we have a caller on line one. We have Jeff from Sacramento. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
All right, yeah, thank you. You're on with Jeff and Mike. And why don't you tell us a little about your game and what we might be able to do to help out?
Sure. There's a dice tower that I put cubes into, like basically like, you know, just little cubes. So instead of, and then those cubes basically represent your workers, like in a worker placement game kind of thing. Okay. So kind of like on your turn, you're going to dump cubes down into this tower, and those are your workers, and they're going to drop onto this mat. The mat is something that I created, and it changes each round. So where the cubes fall, the regions change, and what's on the regions, you know, that you could potentially gain, change every round of the game kind of thing. And so the thought was, my whole thought was like, well, what if we just do this in one big like shebang, right? Where everybody's got all their workers and we're dropping them down in this cube, which is kind of like dropping them onto the board, if you will, but in a smaller situation, right? And all the regions are all the worker placement spots that you kind of have. And so you kind of fight over the resources that you can gain. So for example, in one region, it may be like, oh, you can get wood. So, but whoever has the most cubes in this region would get like 3 wood, and then the next person would get maybe 1 wood, and then maybe the last people won't get any wood or something like that, right? So it's kind of like you're getting all your resources in one shot and you're just fighting for them. And so you have some tools to kind of help mitigate where you land. So that way you're not like, oh, great, I'm just randomly wherever I want. You have just like I said, a couple of tokens that like allow you to reinforce, like add cubes to a region that you're already in, or maybe another token that will allow you to move your cubes from one region to another. So yeah, the whole premise of it was to actually kind of like speed up that, like, okay, I'm going to get one wood, then I'm going to go get one stone, then I'm going to go do this. You're kind of doing it all in one shot, and you're landing on this, like the board changes every turn, you know, what resources are available kind of thing. And the problems I've been having with it are that some people aren't like engaged. I don't know if this is a good word or not, but basically they don't seem like they care about trying to optimize and get it as much as they can. They're like, I'm going to put all 10 of my guys on this one square. And what happens is when that occurs, they're like, okay, great, you won that one square, but you weren't really like very efficient with your pieces and your workers. And so it kind of messes up the whole dynamic of fighting for the balance of all of the goods gets kind of swung one way or another, because somebody just says like, I'm only going to go for this one, even though it doesn't really make sense to put all of your guys in that one area. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys or not.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
So is there anything, so is this the sort of the resource gathering mechanic, but there's also a board play aspect, or you have a mat that you're building up your own fiefdom or something? Is there other stuff happening, or is most of the action of the game just in this tray onto which your cubes fall from the tower sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. So basically you got it right. Basically you're gathering the resources and then you're building your own like fiefdom with it.
Okay. So you have a private player mat. And you're adding buildings, yep, or something to it or whatever, the details of which maybe we'll get to as they matter. Okay.
Yep.
How often are the players engaging with the tower? Like, so in Agricola, for example, you start the game with 2 workers, you place your 2 workers, you take them up, then the next round you place 2, you know, like, is it like, how many I guess how many times in a game do the players have to drop their tokens and their cubes or whatever?
Yeah, that's so basically they probably would in a typical game, they're probably going to do this about 5 to 8 times.
Okay.
So they'll get enough resources to kind of, you know, get them a little bit into the game, or, you know, to build so much of their mat out each round, if you will. And then they're all going to just drop more guys back in. And as you're building out, you're going to kind of earn more workers. So you can put more guys into the battle for resources kind of thing as you kind of build your mat out. Yeah.
Nice.
So go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, so your problem has been, you said, engagement. Like, players are taking wildly suboptimal plays, which just sort of wrecks, sort of breaks the game.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, because, you know, like when you're playing a regular worker placement game, you know, their only options really are, you know, I can take my worker and I can put him here. So it's very controlled and very, like, you know, it's not like you're directing the players, but in a sense, they don't have a lot of options, so they're just going to, okay, I'm going to take this and I'm going to put him here. So either way, they're going to go and they're going to get a good, and they're going to, you know, block somebody else out. So in a way, it's hard for them to kind of mess up the game, where as in this kind of is more freeform, bigger battle, you can get one person that says, well, you know what, I'm going to save up all my guys for the next round, and I'm only going to put 2 in there. And then you get everybody else dumping a lot of their guys in there, and then they don't come away with hardly anything. And so the balance of the resources and who gets them swings wildly, because you have people that don't participate fully each round, right? And I've run multiple playtests. Some people are highly engaged and they're very into it, and they're like, yeah, this is awesome. But then if you get just one person that's not into it, or they're trying something, I don't want to say weird, but they're trying something totally different that I didn't expect. Like, I didn't think they would, you know, just say, well, I'm going to put 1 in here and I'm going to just build up for the next turn, even though I don't have any resources and so I can't build my engine and, you know, that sustaining thing that you kind of want to do. But yeah, that's been happening. And it's, and what happens is you get one person that just doesn't do anything, and you start having this skewing where, you know, 2 out of the 4 regions are highly contested, and then the other people just kind of get some free regions because there's nobody fighting for them. And so it kind of just disrupts kind of the balance of, mm-hmm. you know, what's going on.
I have 2 clarifying questions and then I think I'm good. The cube tower, does everything come out in one, everything spills out in one direction? Like one face of the cube tower?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. So it comes out, and so we kind of did it where it's like, one person drops their cubes at a time, and then I kind of have a mat right next to it that's kind of like a duplicate, so you can take your pieces off and put them into the regions that they go into. That way the next guy's pieces that come down don't, like, mess with the regions.
Dislodge, yeah, okay.
The physics don't just totally mash up where you just landed. So, yeah, you put it down, you put your cubes down, and you find out what regions you land in, and you kind of offload them into the mat off to the side with the real regions on it, and then the next person drops theirs down, kind of thing.
And my last question is, do you drop all of the guys, you drop all the cubes every single turn?
Well,
do you drop all the cubes every single turn, or do you drop only a portion of the cubes? Like, is there some reason why somebody would be like, well, I'm saving up for next turn because next turn I want a bigger turn?
Yeah, so since the mat changes every round, so there, it's like, think about it, the worker placement spots change every round. There's some spots where they're like, I don't really, maybe I want to save up because I want more of this other type of resource. So some people can hold back, but, you know, and that's, again, that's part of the problem, right, is that they can choose how many they want to hold back. So I don't force them to dump everything down. They can say, like, oh, I'm going to hold back 2 or 3, and I'm going to try to, or I'm not going to drop as many because I've got a couple of tokens that allow me to boost in the regions that I land in. So I'm going to save some and move on to, you know, keep those for the next round where I might not have as many tokens. So, yeah.
Okay.
So the things that this makes me think of, you know, without playing the game, are a couple of chapters in the You Said This Wouldn't Be Fun book, that seem pertinent are the idea of incentives and the idea of transparency. And so what I wonder about is whether the issue is that players simply don't perceive the benefits to themselves to contest these regions, or if the incentive structures are out of whack and players, in fact, do not benefit sufficiently from contesting these regions, and so they're correct to not contest them aggressively. Do you have a sense for how players... It sounds like the issue isn't necessarily that players who don't contend for these regions in the way you want them to go on to win. It doesn't sound like it that's a winning strategy. It sounds like the issue is more that it makes the game unfun for everybody else, or that something falls flat when they choose not to contend for those resources, even when it's in their interest and when they have the incentive to do so.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Actually, I think the problem is more psychological with people that don't like to directly compete or, you know, have any kind of conflict, right? It's kind of what I've been noticing. Like, people who don't... So, like, in a regular worker placement game, you just put one guy down and you can put him anywhere on the board, right? And so even if you take a suboptimal move or a move that you don't... It's really kind of harmless in a way. You're not really directly attacking somebody. Yeah, sure, you're denying them a spot, but you're not, like, kicking somebody out of a spot or taking stuff from them. And what I notice is that these people that have been playing, like, there's guys that are highly competitive, and so they're getting in there and like, I really want to fight for all of these, but if you get one person, so I've had two people that are not, I just feel it. I know it's hard to say, but I feel like they just psychologically don't want to get into the battle with everybody, and then, you know, oh, I swing this one region to, you know, where I get a lot of stuff, and now this guy's not getting as many, because it's more of a player balanced kind of system. That they kind of just tend to pull back from it. That's kind of the vibe I get when I see it, and not because the incentives are kind of laid out, right? It's like, okay, if you win this, you get this resources, which will help you build this, and that's victory points. So, you know, and on each region, it actually outlines, like, you could get this many resources if you're first in this region. I even did some switching of the incentives to make it so, like, if you have the least amount of units in this region, but you have to have at least one, you'll become the winner, right? So I just tried, like, different things to kind of see if I could get people to buy into it, I guess you could say.
That's interesting that like, players are some players are choosing not to get competitive, and which do the
That's
regions
tricky,
have,
yeah.
do the regions have caps to how many people can win, but how many units, like is one region, like, the person with five units wins, the person with three, the next person, you know what I mean? Like, does the region have a cap to how many people can be in that region? Like,
I tried that too. So I did that. I had a playtest with, you know, unlimited. And then I also made it so that it's like, okay, if you get five, or if you get the first person that you get five would win that region. I tried that also, but it's still kind of, like, I always had one person in these playtests that would kind of just break. And I think, like I said, it just seemed to stem from a psychological reason and not so much a more of a competitive reason than anything else. So, yeah, I tried a lot of different things. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how heavy or light is the game? Like, are we talking like an Agricola weighted, like, worker placement sort of game, or is this like, maybe this is a little too light, but, or is this like Century Spice Road?
I would say it's on the lighter side, because you basically are getting resources that you put into a grid, and the grid is like a set collection of kind of some sort. It's like, oh, if you have, because basically you're fighting over different types of resources, and then it's like, okay, if you get, you know, these different colored resources next to each other in a line, like a set, then you score some points off of it. So it's
like a match three kind of thing, almost.
Yeah, kind of. You can think of it like that. That's, yeah. It was real simple from that perspective. Yeah.
That's so weird that pit players are not interested in, I guess, fighting for research. What about this, actually? Have you tried considering, like, potentially putting players who maybe win a region or one region that gets won, or one player that wins a region that round, the player with the most, has to put some of their tokens into, like, a cooling board, so to speak. Like, because almost like if you have the highly competitive people, I wonder if, like, if the highly competitive people, like, go hard and they're like, I'm going to win this spot, or like 10, or I'm going to win the spot with six workers. Did you ever consider the idea of possibly like the most workers that go into one spot have to go to a cooling board, and then the next round they're unavailable? But maybe it gives the players who are psychologically out of it a bit, like, an opportunity where they're like, oh, well, the board's not going to be highly contested this time. I don't have to worry about, for example, Jeff's aggressiveness.
Right. Yeah, that's actually, there's some precedent for that kind of an idea. It's almost, in a way, a little bit like the Dune combat mechanic. Not that you're actually fighting directly here, but it's sort of the more you bid, that's, you know, pieces that are now off your board for a while. And another game that I like very much is a game for the Dektet, which is called Kingpins, and it's a bidding game, but it's the same idea that when you win a bid, all the pieces that you won the bid with are then locked up for, you know, and you only retrieve one per turn or per bid, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, sort of this cooler idea in an area control game is actually very interesting. That could really work.
Because auction games do it all the time, where the winning bid goes back in the box or back to the bank, and the losing bids don't. And so it almost makes this opportunity where the more you lose, it's like, well, the more money you have to maybe throw down and win another bid. So to me, the game actually sounds a bit like, it's a bit more like it's almost less like a worker placement specifically than it is like a crazy bidding game. Have you ever played Scott Nicholson's Going, Going, Gone?
No, I haven't.
So Scott Nicholson's Going, Going, Gone is, now this one's a loony kind of game. This is nothing like what you're doing here. Scott Nicholson's game is there's items. So you're collecting items from like a pawn shop or something, like old sneakers and stuff like that. And you want to get sets. You're collecting, effectively you're doing sort of the same thing. You're collecting sets. Like, you want to get two pairs of shoes or whatever the thing. And you put these cups out. And I forgot how many cups. And you put an item under each cup. And you have a bunch of bidding cubes. And the auctioneer for the turn holds up a big board and then gets to count down from 10 as fast or as slow as they want. And you take your bidding cubes and you're throwing them into the queue, into the cups. Right. And then at some point the auctioneer then reaches zero and then puts the auction board, the pallet or whatever, on top of all the cards, on top of all the cups. And that signifies that the bidding is over. And then you look and then you pour each cup out and then you're like, oh, this person, red won the old shoes, and blue won the microphone, and green put all of their stuff into the teddy bear for some reason, right? But it does give people like things that they, it does end up giving people things that they want. But I do wonder if maybe like checking a game out like that might, because that one's a lot lighter and a little more chaotic. So I think people are much more into, because they're just like, oh, it's a crazy bid. and so I don't know. There may be something there.
Okay.
My only other instinct was to try to find some way for the resource aspect to be more cooperative than it is all or nothing. So there's some incentive for us to converge in a place. It makes that thing worth more to us by virtue of our, you know, working together to harvest it or something like that. And one form that could take could just be as simple as, you know, the Web of Power scoring system, which, you know, of course, is the person with the most cubes gets 1 point for every cube that's in that space. Second most gets as many as the first place person, and so on down the line. And so in that kind of a system, maybe not that exact thing, but something like that here, you're rewarding not power plays, like I'm going to go in and dominate this region. You're actually rewarding sort of putting in the least effort and still getting, you know, the biggest proportional increase. So, you know, if you two are in a bidding war and you bid five and he bid four, and I can sneak in with putting one guy in there and I can get four for that, you know, it's like, hey, I like that. That's pretty good. I'm using my pieces very efficiently. So if the focus with the placement was not so much on, you know, what regions can I dominate, but how can I use my pieces most efficiently to get the most out of them, that might also inject some interest into the decision of how many pieces to put in the first place. You know, am I going to go with a bunch of pieces? But then a lot of people can sort of ride my coattails off of that. And, you know, anyway, it might inform that decision as well. So.
Okay. I like that. I like that idea, especially because it sounds like the disinterested players don't want to compete. And so by not competing, they're not playing the game because the game requires some competition. And there's a little more, I think that Web of Power idea is pretty interesting. It's a little more collusion going on.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. And also I also like the cooling off one. I definitely want to try kind of both of these to see kind of how they play out.
I have one last radical idea. Oh, I'm always full of radical ideas. But sometimes my ideas are so like, they so break what you're trying to do that it's almost like, well, you don't have to take them because they could be bad. I tell my students the same thing. I'm like, you don't have to take all my ideas. I'm not the smartest person in the room. My other radical idea to almost get non-engaged players engaged is, so you said it's like a fiefdom. You're building like castles and monasteries and junk like that.
Mm-hmm.
What if it was like a carnival? Like, what if it was a theme that fit with the sort of concept of like chucking stuff into a giant cube tower? Like, maybe you were building a carnival, or I don't know, maybe you're just collecting prizes like teddy bears and junk like that. Like you have like Agricola sort of seriousness with this other component that, from the description to me, in some ways is like, that could be really.
So just to let you guys know. So basically it's an office space kind of theme where you're throwing people in and you're fighting over like printers and donuts and.
All right. You've already got that.
I wish you had told us that, man. That's.
Yeah. I know.
That sounds pretty fun.
That is super cool. That is all right, done. You're great. that way you're great. Because that's one of the things I was thinking of. I was like, your theme needs to fit the gameplay in a way to where they feel like they work together, as opposed to being like, why am I playing this serious game? But I'm also throwing balloons at people. Like, how does this work? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but no, that sounds great. That's awesome.
All right. Well, Jeff, we want to thank you so much for calling in tonight, and we hope these ideas and conversation will be helpful for you. Please call us back sometime and tell us how things are going with the game. It sounds great. Sounds like you have a good one on your hands. So we hope to hear more about it.
Good luck.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you guys. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, and that's all the time we have tonight. And I want to thank our guest designer, Mike Bonet. You can find him on the Who, What, Why cast. And you can find me on Twitter at Bell Tower Games. And you can find You Said This Would Be Fun in Amazon or Drive Through. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me on.